Welcome, True Believer readers, to another episode of Let's Read Spider-Man, the best podcast to break down hard-hitting dialogue such as, "Let me guess, it's a laser module for Teddy Ruxpin, right?" Here to provide analysis to that line and so much more is my friend Eddie. How are you today, Eddie?
Well, I'm slightly under the weather, but I did have a chocolate chip cookie before we started, so I'm buoyed by that. Teddy Ruxpin, we're definitely in my generation here. I remember Teddy Ruxpin. He was kind of scary, though, because he moved his mouth and you put a tape deck behind him. This must have been Spider-Man who said, "This is a laser model," right, James B.?
Yes, and Teddy Ruxpin has a lot of iterations of him. So the first Teddy Ruxpin's in the 80s. He's like the top toy of 85, 86, and then he comes back in the, you know, late, in the even later 80s, and he gets reissued over and over again. So whenever you ran into him, somebody owns the rights to him as of like 2021. So we're not going to be talking about 2021. We're talking about 1988, which is when our first book takes place. It's from early October of 1988, Stan Lee presents The Amazing Spider-Man 306, Humbugged by Micheline and McFarlane.
Yeah, we're getting two Spider-Mans a month now. Well, in this issue, with his ill-fitting jumpsuit and cape, former senior entomology professor Buck Mitty is ready to bring the world to its knees as humbug. He busts into ESU with the might of the Buffalo Treehopper. Unfortunately, Spider-Man happens to be swinging past. A clumsy battle ensues where Humbug nearly splatters himself after falling out of a window. In an attempt to escape Spidey, Humbug takes a hostage, but Spider-Man forces him to exchange his hostage and freedom for some roaches. Spider-Man threatens to squash.
He's trying to squash me.
There are a few, I guess, interludes in the book. One is that the Black Cat goes through the skylight into the old apartment that Peter used to live in, surprising its new tenant. She departs, believing that Peter must have moved because it's too painful in that apartment without her.
Well, at Bedford Towers, Peter and MJ attend a party at building owner and neighbor Jonathan Caesar's penthouse. Caesar ominously alludes that he will have MJ after Peter departs to Cleveland for his latest Webb's book tour. While we also see a businessman kidnapped by the original master of disguise. The Chameleon.
The cover of The Amazing Spider-Man 306 is a shout out to Action Comics 1, if you didn't get a chance to see the cover. Later, Mary Jane buys a DC comic book for Peter, who tells another collector, "Oh, I had a crush on, you know, a character in this book," and you can look over the shoulder, you can see it's actually Supergirl they're talking about.
That cover is super interesting, James B. I noted it too in my notes. But this is such a busy book.
Yeah, I agree. There are a lot of pages reintroducing Humbug, who not only posed like no threat to Spider-Man, but literally had to be saved by Spider-Man and then immediately surrendered because he wanted to save those bugs, like you mentioned.
He's trying to squash me.
I do think when I'm reading this that all three setup stories in this book are going to pan out. So I think this is a way that they're trying to stretch two books in a month, simply using this as a launching pod to get readers to buy our next books. The first of which is from late October of 1988. Stanley presents The Amazing Spider-Man 307, The Thief Who Stole Himself by Micheline and McFarlane.
The Chameleon has assumed the identity of William Duquesne, a prominent businessman, and is using his contacts to strengthen his criminal organization. His ultimate goal is to destroy every aspect of the United States of America. Chameleon also explains how he had his body enhanced to make his flesh completely malleable, allowing him to shapeshift into anyone.
Yeah, in the previous book, during the interlude, we saw him shake someone's hand, it was this William Duquesne guy, and turn into him. Okay, I love him with this power. Although they try really hard to explain it, I'm not really sure it makes sense.
I'm glad I wasn't the only one. Well, while in Chicago, the Chameleon uses that power to assume the identity of Dr. Edmund Dibivich, a leading expert on superconductivity. But Peter, who's also in the Windy City for his Webb's book tour, swings into action and chases the chameleon all over town until he loses him. As MJ returns home from a model shoot, Jonathan Caesar, who is obsessed with Mary Jane, kidnaps her and places her into a soundproof room in Bedford Towers.
Yeah, the Jonathan Caesar kidnapping of MJ plot is the start of this book, and it's the end of this book, while the chameleon fills the middle. Unlike a humbug, chameleon actually escapes.
I know you've said it before that the vulture is Spider-Man's smartest adversary, but chameleon's style and scheme, it's really great all throughout these two books.
Well, this chameleon's new power is like when Loki, the god of mischief, is replacing Odin in Thor the Dark Age and Thor Ragnarok. It's super overpowered, and I don't think this is the chameleon's style and scheme as much as he's just been given an amazing power, and of course, how could you not, you know, do a great job with it?
I guess so, but it's very witty how he goes about using it for whatever, well, his goal of destroying America. I was reminded that that is his overarching goal from when we first saw him. So hopefully we see him more.
That's true. That's true. That he's related to Kraven, as we remember. He's
yes.
got to be some kind of Russian, even though he doesn't talk Russian at all. But this book really, he just filled the middle and then he's gone. This is not his book. This is supposed to be the book that sets up the whole storyline with MJ
right.
and Johnny Caesar. And I think that's going to have to wrap up in the next couple books. The first is from early November of 1988. Stanley presents The Amazing Spider-Man 308 Dread. Once again, by Micheline and McFarlane.
MJ is missing. Jonathan Caesar has her held captive in a beautiful soundproof room, and he intends to keep her there until she succumbs to his will and marries him. Meanwhile, Spider-Man frantically searches for leads and accidentally comes across one of the Taskmaster's criminal goon training schools.
I know you're a fan of McFarlane art. I will say McFarlane makes all his villains look twice as scary. Which for Humbug, by the way, is nothing since he's not scary. But Taskmaster looks better here. I'm like, wow, this guy is double the danger I'm expecting. Maybe he's going to put up twice the fight. Let's find out.
Well, the two tangle. But Taskmaster escapes and Spider-Man burns his training school to the ground. We end with Peter despondent, standing less than 50 feet from MJ on his balcony, with MJ powerless and trapped in her soundproof room.
Kind of a cool idea. I think the picture could be a little different, but it's a clever idea. This Jonathan Caesar kidnapping of MJ plot, for the second book in a row, it's at the start of the book and the end of the book. And, you know, here we are with this time, it's the Taskmaster who's filling the middle. Like the chameleon, the Taskmaster escapes. Peter never confronts Jonathan Caesar, despite his feelings about him. Perhaps he should not rely so much on his spider sense if it's not going to do anything, and use his Peter sense.
Yeah, he did get a tingle, right, when he walked past Caesar's, like, open door or something weird. And he just never went back to it.
In previous books, he's like, I don't like this guy. This guy's creepy. I don't want him spending time with her, you know? And it's not like Mary Jane's like, well, I'm going to the party without you. Like, you know, how does he not like, hey, let me check with this guy? If he had checked with the guy, his spider sense would have went off, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think Peter's going to have to go talk to him and start finding out what's going on. He'll probably do it in the next book, which is from late November of 1988, Stanley presents The Amazing Spider-Man 309, Sticks and Stones by Micheline and McFarlane.
Spidey continues to harass all the criminals he knows, including Manslaughter Marsdale, but can't find any leads on MJ's location. Mary Jane is a defiant victim, but when Caesar spots Spider-Man nearby, he's nervous Mary Jane will be found. Caesar hires Sticks and Stone, a weird pair of super baddies, to go after Spider-Man.
You know, Eddie, I believe only a few podcasts ago, you said things were really good for Peter and MJ. They were traveling. They had the Webb's book. There's lots of money. I blame this whole mess on you, Eddie. You better hope that Spidey gets in there and rescues her soon.
Jeez, well, thankfully, Mary Jane doesn't need any rescuing. She smashes Caesar with a lamp, electrocutes his goons, grabs one of their guns, and saves her husband from sticks and stone. The lovebirds are relieved to be reunited and go home. MJ is quick to point out that Caesar didn't know Peter was Spider-Man and would have kidnapped her even if she wasn't married to Spider-Man.
Caesar would have done the same thing if I'd married Larry Bud Melman.
This absolves Peter of any guilt about, you know, MJ being in danger because he's Spider-Man and if they figure this out.
Yeah.
MJ was arguably more of a superhero than Peter was in these two books.
Okay, hold on. First of all, she was a prisoner in the last book. And yeah, she took out a guy who didn't really restrict her access to anything. But I'll give her appropriate props for escaping and much deserved. she gets a lot of credit for getting to Spider-Man and helping him out. But he's been beating up the whole town, facing all these fourth string criminals for two books. And in the previous issue, Eddie, she didn't do a single thing. So,
really? I mean, she is kidnapped. She is under tremendous duress.
But you said in your argument, MJ was more of a superhero than Peter in these last two books. She didn't do anything in 308. She was just a prisoner. She made a couple moves at the end of 309. Don't get me wrong. She goes out there and knows where Spider-Man is because Johnny Caesar's like, you know, you're... I don't know what she's she hears Spider-Man's fighting in the graveyard or something or wherever she is. And then she gets the gun and gets out there and saves him. Like, that's a big deal that she does all that move. But she wasn't doing anything for that first book. And Peter's busy destroying the whole town looking for her. So it's not like she was doing more than he did.
Okay. All
that's right. All I'm saying. Well, she's not going to be the star of the next book, I assure you. And that's from early December of 1988. Stanley presents The Amazing Spider-Man 310, Killer Shrike Force by Micheline and McFarlane.
All is good now, right, James B? Well, after stopping Killer Shrike, Peter goes to his first grad school lab run by Professor Swan. There, he meets his colleague, a doctorate student, Anna Marie Baker. It's immediately clear something is wrong when Peter's spider sense tingles.
ESU scientist, and a spider sense goes off. Ooh, what a surprise. Let's hope there's no cloning. No one's turning into a lizard. That's what we can get out of the way. We'll be far ahead of the curve. No one changes into a man full of bees.
How does this university stay in business? Like, who's like, I really want to go to ESU. Study
no jackals. I mean, this whole thing is a disaster.
How can we forget the bees and the Nazi?
Unbelievable.
Thank you, James B. Well, after a movie with MJ, Spidey heads back to Swan's lab and finds the Tinkerer. The Tinkerer is blackmailing Swan into using his lab to build weapons for clients, namely a power booster for Killer Shrike. When Killer Shrike crashes through the window, battles Spider-Man for the power booster. Killer Shrike does get the booster, but Tinker has rigged it to fail until he's been compensated, or paid, we could say. Killer Shrike is captured while Tinkerer sneaks away. It's good to see the Tinkerer. I liked him the first time I saw him, and ever since. This is a good storyline accommodating a lot of different characters well.
Yeah, it's a good storyline, but Spider-Man barely fights in this issue. The most important scene is Peter's about to lie to MJ. He tells her, I got to go pick up some ice cream or something like that. And then he's like, you know what? That's not the case. I suspected something was going on at ESU. I want to change into Spider-Man and go back and figure that out. I don't want to lie to you. And she's like, thank you for telling me the truth. You know, stay out of trouble and go ahead and do what you got to do. Yeah. And it works out.
At what point in this book, the narrator explains a killer shrike is a bird? I didn't know this, and my family is filled with bird-watching people. Here I thought shrike was some made-up name.
Yeah, I had the exact same comment in my notes. The costume this issue focuses on wings and talons as well, which I've never seen before. I am firmly in the camp that no one knew this was a bird, and they probably came back and said, listen, next time we bring up Killer Shrike, can we please make sure everyone knows it's a bird? It's a big explanation about what kind of bird it is and everything.
Yeah. So. I like looked it up, what kind of bird it was. Does this raise Killer Shrike standing in your mind, James B., that he's not just some made-up word?
Yeah, he's still a fourth-string criminal.
I think he's one of your least favorite villains that Spider-Man fights. And combined with the Tinkerer, who also, if I'm wrong.
No, the Tinkerer's fine.
Oh, he's fine with you? Okay.
Yeah.
You did like Toy the last time we saw the Tinkerer.
Speaking of toys, the Tinkerer used to be a sponsor having a toy store for us.
Yes, it's true.
No, Killer Shrike used to live, he lived in an apartment building once. And remember, Spider-Man was having an issue with something else. And Killer Shrike was like, thought Spider-Man was here to bother him.
Yeah.
He's like, why is Spider-Man here to bother me? Like, he's just like he's a nothing character.
It's similar in this book, too. Both times that Spider-Man runs into Killer Shrike, it's not intentional. And Shrike, I mean, he is, at the beginning of the book, he's like robbing an armored car. But then when he's just going in to like claim his power booster from the Tinker, and Spider-Man happens to be there. He's got some really rotten luck with Spider-Man.
Let me come back to these criminals in a second. Let me just really quickly knock off our sponsor for today. Eddie, when it's out of whack and out of warranty, what do? Just call the Tinkerer Repair Shop. They will tell you when to bring it in and how much it costs. From 10-cent radio repairs to $10,000 power boosters, no job is too big or too small. Just make sure you pay in full at the time of pickup. Credit not accepted. Discounts for senior citizens and important people. www.tinkerer.com or at tinkerer1122 on Instagram.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to not pay the Tinkerer. My radio might explode.
So we're talking about these criminals, and I'm thinking, look, okay, this is the first time that they're running. Now, I understand they could be running Marvel Tales, which doesn't really count as a Spider-Man book because it's not new content. But they're putting out two books in the same month, plus they're running Web, as we know, and plus they're running Spectacular. I know it's going to get worse before it gets better, but they've got four books, and they got to be looking through their notes saying, like, okay, what can we do? Who's available? Who's not busy fighting the Avengers? Who's not fighting Iron Fist on the street? And they're like, well, Killer Shrike's available, Humbug's available, Jonathan Caesar's out there if we need him.
It's got to be so hard to keep track of what's going on.
There's just, right? But they're like, let's just keep it to people we don't have to. Then they're like, if the Chameleon comes in, we better get this guy out of town as soon as possible. We might, between him and Taskmaster, we might need these guys again.
You know, I was interested. You said there were three plot lines in, 306?
Yep.
The Black Cat never came back.
I agree.
At least not yet.
I think she's probably back in one of the other books.
Ooh.
They probably were like, we'll use her. And then the other book can say, like, she's going to be bouncing around in either Webs or and they'll be like, oh, asterisk, see Amazing Spider-Man 306, you know, dash, you know, Shifty Shooter or something like that. It's one of those moments.
Yeah, so the six panels she's in this book, 306.
Hey, before we wrap this up, I'd like to do a little segment. We haven't done this in a while.
Okay.
All right. So, listeners, it's now time for a segment I like to call, Does Eddie Remember This Character from the MCU?
I should be less enthusiastic.
All right, Eddie, I did a little bit of research.
Yes.
Back in one of our Let's Read Spider-Man podcasts, I think it was like 156, give or take, 158, okay. Somewhere back there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We played a game called Does Eddie Remember This Character from the MCU?
Ooh.
We played it again about 50 podcasts later on 198.
Okay.
And we're going to play it here 50 podcasts later. Now, you might think to yourself, okay, whatever, right? We've done this before. But here's the deal. Here's what makes it special. This is the third time I'm asking you the exact same character. Here we go. Eddie, we talked today about the Taskmaster.
Okay, yes.
Do you remember, after all your training, where the Taskmaster appears in the MCU?
James B., these heated moments for me, it really turns up the burner on my end of the podcast. Well, I think you told me the Taskmaster was a woman.
That is correct.
Woo!
Now, can you just tell me, when did you see the Taskmaster?
This woman. My memory to get better over time. Oh, my. Was she in Black Widow?
She was in Black Widow, Eddie!
Oh, yes! Yes!
Third time's a charm. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Does Eddie Remember This Character from the MCU?
Oh my goodness, listeners, if you want to email me and tell me what a great job I did identifying the character for the third time, email us at letsreadspiderman@gmail.com or click on the link in this podcast description to join our Discord channel and connect with us through social media. I accept many thumbs up in our Discord.
Okay, technically you didn't identify the character for the third time. You identified the character on the third time.
Well,
and now it's time.
Semantics.
Sure. And now it's time for the close. I'm James B., joined by
Eddie.
And remember, listeners, if you're searching for your kidnapped supermodel wife, don't worry.
She'll knock out her captor, electrocute her guards, and save you. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Eddie, MJ was trying to make Peter feel better, and she said, hey, I would have been kidnapped even if I had married Larry Bud Melman. Do you know who Larry Bud Melman is?
I have no idea, James, but help me out.
Larry Bud Melman is a short little man on the David Letterman show. He has glasses, and he's just like a character that they call on all the time and say, like, we go now to reporter Larry Bud Melman to answer some questions. He's just like a little guy who screams and yells.
Hmm.
He's just a guy. No, he's just an old man. No, okay, it's all right.
Letterman, I did not watch.
I didn't watch it either, but like, I mean, it's just sort of just know who he is. The couple of 8 years I have on you makes it. You know, I'm an older person. Speaking of older people, while grocery shopping in Amazing Spider-Man 307. An old woman gets Mary Jane's autograph as a famous model. And then she says to Peter, hey, I recognize you. And he's like, is it from Webs? Is it from The Tonight Show? And she's like, no, weren't you in my class in third grade? You're Irving Sprinkle. And he's like, I don't think I am. Eddie, when you're putting out two The Amazing Spider-Man books in a month, you have to have room to fill other things. This is the kind of stuff they can put in there.
I approve of this, though. It's super funny, and Spider-Man is supposed to be funny. So.